it just was a very challenging 2 years. And I think that was the point where I knew that if I could get through those 2 years and finish, obviously, my master's and get through, you know, cleaning clubs for, you know, 3 12-hour shifts in between right. all that stuff, you know, like, you know, I could get through this thing. And my message to young people that want to get in, you know, into this profession, that it does take time. It takes years and years and years of experience. But if you're willing to stick it out, there's obviously great rewards at the end. You know, one of the first things I say in our team meeting every year is you got to leave your ego at the door. The challenge is to mold all these really talented players into one cohesive group. I think the expectation level and what's expected out of our players both on and off the field is said without being said before they even get here.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
From the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina, welcome back to the podcast that connects you with the very best baseball minds in our game. We appreciate each of you joining our conversation. Go ahead and pull up a bucket and join us as we kick off our fall episodes in the same spirit as we open up each and every ABCA National Convention. We give the floor to our reigning NCAA Division I National Championship coach to get things rolling downhill, and we're going to get to this fantastic interview shortly. But first and foremost, we also want to thank our proud sponsor of the podcast, our great friends over at AstroTurf, the leaders in the clubhouse for the turf industry. And if you're interested in their product and the extraordinary results that AstroTurf can bring to your facility, stay tuned to the end of this show as we connect with Aaron Klotz, who's the East Coast Director of Baseball Operations, and he offers some tremendous insight into the behind-the-scenes viewpoint of AstroTurf on what they're doing for facilities around the country. Now, today's interview is a special one. It signifies the start of a brand new membership year for us here at ABCA. All starts Friday, September 1st. We open up registration for our ABCA convention in Indianapolis this January, 4th through the 7th. And the perfect leadoff hitter is today's guest, the head coach from the University of Florida Gators and our Division I national champion, longtime ABCA member Kevin O'Sullivan. It's a terrific opportunity to connect with Sully to discuss building a championship culture and his insight into details that go into orchestrating what they've built there at UF, finally breaking through this year and winning their last game. Now, Coach O'Sullivan's staff and vision for the program have been the absolute model of consistency, with 6 College World Series appearances in the past 8 seasons. They're winners of 50 games their past 3 seasons, and maybe the most compelling stat of them all. Hold your seats here. Sully's Gators have been a top 8 national seed for 8 of the 10 seasons he sat in the big chair there at Florida. That's amazing when you hear that, and it's interesting to hear the family atmosphere inside the Gator dugout and the locker room, the inner workings of emerging role players within this season, and how keeping it simple, focusing on pitching and defense, seemed to be all the difference for this year's Florida team that propelled them to dogpiling in Omaha for the first time in school history. So buckle in, coaches, pop in those earbuds. I want you to sit back and enjoy this fantastic conversation with the head coach of the University of Florida. Kevin O'Sullivan joins our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, and this great interview is coming at you right now. As we approach a brand new membership year, we're staring down our ABCA National Convention in Indianapolis in January. It's only fitting we kick up our fall episodes, and we start with our very first speaker that'll be there in Indianapolis with us. We're talking to the 2017 Division I National Champion coach from the University of Florida, Kevin O'Sullivan. Kevin, thanks for being on the show with us today.
Absolutely. Appreciate you having me on.
We're excited about this one as we kind of dive into what you're going to talk about on stage, give us some history throughout the program, but as we kind of get into building a championship culture, that's the crux of this conversation. But where we want to start, obviously, is a huge congrats. Phenomenal season. First baseball national title there at Florida. And I think when we go into talking through what made this team so special, and we were just reflecting before we started recording, you mentioned you've had some more talented teams, but this one was different. Could you open that up for us?
Yeah, you know, this team was obviously talented enough. Mm-hmm. I think we were preseason ranked in the top 5, and I knew going into the season our strength was probably going to be our starting pitching and our defense, and that's what it ended up being. We had a lot of unique stories throughout the year. We've had to endure some injuries like everybody does, and
that's right.
We had some different guys step up and in roles that they maybe were not used to being in, and I think we started the season, the SEC played 3-6 and ended up being, you know, 21-9 and tying LSU for the SEC regular season. And then obviously we go into the postseason and we play Marist the first game, and we've got a 1-1 lead going into the eighth and end up winning the first game. And then we had to play extra innings against South Florida in the Saturday game in the regional, and we had to win an extra there. We played Bethune-Cookman, who beat us and took us to the final game in the regional. And, you know, it was a scoreless game through five, and we had to, you know, obviously win that one in the second half of the ball game. And then we played a very, very talented Wake Forest team, you know, in the super regional, and we had to go through all those rain delays. And, that's, you know, right. Fido pitches four innings the first game and has pitching really well. And their starter, Dunchy's throwing the ball extremely well. So we kind of had a feel that it was going to be a, you know, a low scoring game, and we got rained out, and we had a tough decision to make on who we were going to bring back, you know, after the rain delay. And we ended up bringing in Brady Singer, our number two starter, who was supposed to throw the next day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we won that game, I believe, in extra innings. And then Wake Forest beats us in the second game on a walk-off home run by their catcher. And then the third and deciding game of the Super Regional for the right to go to the World Series, you know, Tyler Dyson steps up out of nowhere after another rain delay where Brady Singer throws only two innings. And I think it wasn't a start for Tyler, but it was basically his second start after the rain delay of the entire year and pitched great for us. And then obviously we get to the World Series and, you know, beat obviously a very good TCU team, and Fido's pitches great, and then Singer's really good against Louisville, and obviously we all know how good Louisville is. And then we lose to TCU 9-2, and then we got to bring back Fido again, our number one, to get to the championship series. He pitches lights out again against TCU, and then obviously we played LSU in the finals, and we win a 4-3 ball game. And you know, Nick Horvath makes a perfect throw, I believe, in the eighth to throw out a runner at second base, maybe slow down some momentum. And Brady Singer was outstanding. I think he had 12 strikeouts in that ball game. And then Tyler Dyson once again pitches, you know, the championship game again, winning his pitcher in LSU's history. And those six really good innings. And then we obviously had some really good defensive plays. J.J. Schwartz played with one out, runs the first and third, makes a perfect throw to home to get Robertson. And you know, then we had a really tough decision to make. LSU had first and third, two innings in a row, and I think they scored one run. And then, you know, we had a decision to make on what we were going to do. So we rolled the dice and threw Jackson Kowar, our next day starter, brought him in. And first pitch gets ground ball, like I said, to JJ, and throws a strike to Mikey at home. And then we score, you know, four runs to bottom of the eighth, kind of, you know, opened up a little bit. But just a remarkable season. Had to overcome a lot of adversity. I think we won 19 one-run games.
Yeah, there it is. Michael
Byrne, who was our closer, did not start our season as our closer, and did an unbelievable job for us at the back end of the bullpen, which we had no real answer for that. And we figured that out, or at least tried it, the Tennessee weekend, the third SEC weekend of the year. And we lost two out of three to Tennessee that weekend to put us at 3-6 in the league. But we stayed with Michael, and you know, he solidified our bullpen, and like I said, it's just one of those years that a little bit of luck, a lot of grit, and kind of the ball just kind of bounces your way. And you know, obviously to be able to win the last game of the year, you got to have a little luck as well.
That's a fact. Well, only one team gets to do that, and you referenced this, and I was going to bring this up: 19 one-run wins. That says a lot about the character inside your dugout, does it not?
It does. We had some really good leadership, you know, Dalton Guthrie, you know, JJ Schwartz, Mike Rivera. I mean, I can't say enough about Alex Fajito. You know, those guys going into their junior year, sometimes it gets to be a little bit difficult because, you know, there's a lot of pressure on them to perform really well. And sometimes you can get consumed with the draft, but you know, I just had a different feel about this junior class, that they were going to be able to, you know, to be able to handle the expectations, not just with themselves, but with the team. And, you know, like I said, I don't want to leave anybody out, but we just had some really, really, really good leaders in the locker room.
It's awesome. You're definitely fun to watch. And that junior class was ultra talented. I think the next question becomes, you bring that national championship trophy finally to your baseball program, but back to Gainesville, what's the effect that's been on campus or even out on the recruiting trails and just around that community?
Well, we obviously, there's a lot of people excited. I think it was one of those things where people were just excited it finally happened. I mean,
right.
We've been out there quite a few times, and at one point, I believe we had lost 5-1-1 games in a row out in Omaha. So I think there was I don't want to use the word frustration with the results in Omaha, but I could sense that, you know, there was a sense of a little bit of frustration that why we couldn't, you know, finally knock down the door, so to speak. But, you know, I knew at some point we were going to be fortunate enough to win. I just didn't know when. And obviously this team showed a lot of heart and character. And, you know, we were just able and fortunate to win, to win the last game of the year.
Awesome. We're excited for you to open up more into this as we get into January in Indianapolis. But going into that, when we approach convention, and obviously your experience over the years as a loyal ABCA member and attending conventions and obviously enjoying the networking and relationship building that's there, could you talk about that experience for our listeners and give them your perspective on what the ABCA has meant to you throughout your coaching career?
It's interesting because you never stop learning in this business.
That's right.
And I think that falls true in life as well. And, you know, every time you go out there to the convention, it's always interesting to listen to other people. And I've always said this, if you go to the convention, you learn one thing, it's worth it. Mm-hmm. And every year I've come away with different ideas and different ways to look at things. And it's extremely educational and it just keeps your mind fresh.
Talk us through your career in baseball, because you've had some good stops and obviously spent a majority of the midpoint of your career there as assistant at Clemson. But those stops along the way, there's been things that you've learned and picked up and lessons that you've taken with you that's really helped you excel there as the head coach at Florida. Could you open that up for our guys listening in?
Yeah. You know, I get asked that question a lot about people wanting, you know, especially former players that want to get into this profession. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I literally climbed the ladder. When I got done playing at the University of Virginia, I was a substitute teacher, coached high school baseball for one spring, and then went back to Florida Community College in Jacksonville with Coach Howard Rowe and coached there for a year, was an adjunct instructor. And from that point, I went back to Florida Atlantic with Coach Kevin Cooney, and, you know, he was great, and I learned an awful lot from him, and I got my master's there for 2 years, and I went back to the University of Virginia, my alma mater, with Coach Womack, and, you know, that was really the first real paying job that I got. I remember I was making $15,000 a year, and obviously it was an unbelievable experience for me, and it was my first job. And obviously, like I said, I spent 2 years there, and then I moved on to Fort Myers, and I coached a little less than 2 years with the Minnesota Twins, and I learned an awful lot from Rick Knapp and Steve Little and Larry Corrigan, and the list goes on and on. I mean, sure. It was a tremendous experience. You know, you're sitting there in the locker room, you got the hitting coordinator, the pitching coordinator, and I was just, you know, all ears, and learned a tremendous amount there for, you know, just under 2 years, like I said. And then I got a great opportunity with Coach Leggett, and I've been very fortunate. You know, I learned when I was with Jack and Tim Corbin, you know, it's just, you know, the whole recruiting and, you know, the whole thing about a program, it's more than just the wins. You know, there's so much more to it. And, you know, Jack and Tim and I are like brothers. And, you know, I've been fortunate to where I've been in the last 19 years, 9 years at Clemson and 10 years at Florida at only two places. And right. I've never been one to look for another job. I've always been one to stay focused on the job that I had. Uh-huh. And like I said, I've been very fortunate to have been at two great schools for 19 years.
When you sit here right here on this interview and you think back of that first job, that young Kevin O'Sullivan that gets into coaching, what makes you laugh about that young 23-year-old guy?
Right decision. You know, I mean, it was, I think the most difficult years that I had was that year, it was those 2 years I was getting my master's, because I was working at a golf course named Admirals Cove in Jupiter, three 12-hour shifts. And in between that, obviously, I was running down to Boca, you know, helping, you know, Coach Cooney and John McCormick and obviously, you know, the baseball program there. And I was getting my master's at the same time. So it just was a very challenging 2 years. And I think that was the point where I knew that if I could get through those 2 years and finish, obviously, my master's and get through, you know, cleaning clubs for, you know, three 12-hour shifts in between all that stuff. You know, that I could get through this thing. And And that's what I, and that's my message to young, to, you know, to young people that want to get into, you know, into this profession, that it does take time, and it takes years and years and years of experience, and you got to make commitments. But if you're willing to stick it out, there's obviously great rewards at the end.
You know, I firmly believe the first few years in coaching are the world's largest weed eater for coaches. I mean, it'll absolutely cut out the ones that aren't in it for the right reasons or the ones that want it way too quickly, and you really do have to persevere and grind. I'm glad you absolutely opened up that point for our guys. Now, first team meeting, this is as we get into the culture that you've set there at Florida, and I'm so intrigued by this. We were talking before we got recording, spent 3 years at Kentucky watching you from across the way and obviously watching you on TV and out in Omaha. I just respect your program, and I think a lot of coaches do, for what you are. You are consistent across every fundamental. You always play great defense. You guys always pitch, and you're always tough outs at the plate, and you find ways to score runs. But from your very first team meeting and your vision, Kevin, when you took the job at Florida, could you open up what you saw when you walked in as the first, you know, first-year head coach?
Well, first of all, I've been fortunate. I don't know many programs in the country that could say they've had the same two assistant coaches.
That's right.
On their staff for the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I can't say enough about Craig Bell and Brad Whitesell. I mean, the success that we've had over the last decade, it certainly falls on their shoulders.
Sure.
And, you know, they're great at recruiting. They're great at fundamentals. I knew Florida could be really good and consistent. And the biggest attraction, obviously I'm from the state of Florida, but the biggest attraction is obviously the players in the state. Mm-hmm. And I did know it was going to be challenging. I certainly knew how good the University of Miami and Florida State were. And I knew that was going to be a big hurdle, to get our program consistently as good as those two programs have been. But it all starts with recruiting. And I've always been hands-on in the recruiting process. And, you know, we tried to find the right players for this program. And, you know, one of the first things I say in our team meeting every year is you got to leave your ego at the door. Because obviously we're dealing with some very talented players.
That's right.
And every year we have arguably one of the best recruiting classes in the country. But the challenge is to mold all these really talented players into one cohesive group. And it takes time. It takes time. But I think we're at a point now where I don't want to say the program's running itself, but I think the expectation level and what's expected out of our players both on and off the field is said without being said before they even get here. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, it all falls on the shoulders of Brad and Craig and obviously Lars Davis, our volunteer, who's been a huge, huge, huge lift for our program the last couple of years. And like I said, it really starts with the players. And just trying to find the right players that fit, you know, into your program. It's not necessarily the best players, but the players that best fit into your, you know, into your program and your locker room.
That's right. Certainly to build consistency over time, you having that staff in place for so long, it definitely helps solidify that culture in place. I'm interested, Kevin, when you're walking in from Clemson, did you have to change your recruiting eye a little bit knowing you were walking into the toughest conference in the country, in the Southeastern mm-hmm. Conference? Did you adjust accordingly or maybe more suited towards the type of player that you wanted to have inside your program as a head coach?
Well, we certainly went into it with a blueprint. We built our program on pitching and defense.
There you go.
There's other teams, you know, that we play that are they're probably more physical than we are. But we've tried to recruit as many baseball players as we possibly could. Mm-hmm. And you know, we've had a lot of shorts. We've had some really good shortstops in this program. But, you know, our whole infield this past year, when we had Christian Hicks at first base, was all they were all high school shortstops. India was a shortstop in high school. Obviously, Guthrie was a shortstop, and Lippitt was a shortstop. And we just got some baseball players. And, you know, we've always put, you know, a lot of our recruiting emphasis on pitching. And, you know, obviously, you know, at times we've been a little bit maybe deficient offensively. Because we spent a lot of our scholarship on pitching. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you know, it all revolves around, you know, pitching, defense. Obviously, you have to have some guys that can really hit, you know, in the middle of your order. But we try to stay away from that one-dimensional player, the guys that, you know, that just hit. So we just really try to find as many good baseball players as we can.
It's really good. You know, the proof's in the pudding, man. In 11 trips to Omaha in Florida history, your staff's been six of those, and that's within the last eight seasons. The three-year run you just coming off of, So three straight College World Series experiences, winning over 50 games in each season. Your tenure there, 77 players drafted, 11 that are now currently in the big leagues, seven first-rounders in the last 6 years. Just an awesome example of getting in and really getting your hands dirty, taking your culture to into the next level, and it really paying off and really focusing on where you're going to take things. And I'm interested, when you really think about your culture, I love that you say you built it on pitching and defense. It's just that time-tested, tried-and-true approach to building a championship program. But define your culture, Sully, if you could. Kind of pull back the curtain a little bit on what are the standards or pillars inside the Gator baseball program.
Once again, you got to leave your ego at the door. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to brag about how hard we throw or, what our stats were in high school or what kind of a draft I was or what type of money I turned down. This is the Florida baseball program. And when you decide to come here, obviously there's an obligation on their part, but there's also an obligation on our coaching staff.
That's right.
Because a lot of our kids do turn down quite a bit of money to come to school here. Mm-hmm. We don't use Twitter. My philosophy is I've got these guys for basically most of them for 3 years, and it's hard enough to play at Florida and in this league. It's hard enough to do the schoolwork because obviously Florida is a great school academically, that I want their full attention. And I want the players to be accountable, and we don't have many off the field issues. Players know there's consequences for every decision they make, both good and bad. And, like I said, we've had some really, really good kids. And I think in the recruiting process, you're recruiting families as much as you are the players.
That's right.
And obviously we've had some really, really good kids and some great families that have been involved in our program for the last decade.
Are there any unique traditions inside your locker room or inside your program, things that, certainly are relative to the guys that pay the price and work their way through your program? Anything you would share with our listeners that maybe is a little bit unique for what you guys do there in Gainesville?
We've started to implement some ROTC things and some team building things in the fall.
Okay.
But to be honest with you, I don't get involved in the locker room very much. That's their space. And
there you go.
I want the players to have some freedom. I want them to have, to enjoy coming down to the field every day. And, I don't really go into the locker room a whole lot. I try to give them their space and let's face it, there's a lot of things that these players have to do nowadays. It's just not baseball. There's school tutors, there's community service stuff that they have to do each fall and spring, and try to be involved in the community as much as we can. And there's a lot more demands on student athletes now than there's ever been. And quite honestly, there's a microscope on them, and they have to understand that. And like I said, I'm just awfully proud of the way our players conduct themselves both on and off the field. And I've gotten so many compliments on our players, and that's as enjoyable as any win that we've ever had. I really enjoy when people go out of their way to compliment our players and, how they've gone out of their way to sign autographs and taking the time to talk to young kids after games and those types of things. And like I said, those types of things are as enjoyable as any win we've ever had.
Now, if there is a coach listening to this and they're working through this podcast to gain something to take back to their program and the importance of culture and how much that you have to feed it. And even 10 years in, it's going to your 11th season, I'm sure you're still mindful of the culture that's in place and keeping your feet grounded on exactly, again, like you mentioned earlier, what it's going to take to stay involved and stay consistent, stay successful inside your program. Could you offer that coach any of your tips or advice or your perspective on how important culture is that will elevate your program towards winning?
Well, I think communication is a big thing. I think you have to have a relationship with your players. They need to know exactly what's expected. And I was told this a long time ago, and my mentor was Bob Shaw when I first started coaching. And he used to always tell me, if you demand a lot, you'll get a lot. And you have to be consistent in your approach, be consistent in your message, and treat every player the same. And oftentimes, that 35th guy on your roster, he needs more attention than maybe your best player. And everybody needs to feel like they're contributing. And, a lot of time is spent with, each and every player on our club. And the, our offices are obviously always open, but it's those players that are role players that really, really make your club. Obviously Alex Baedo and Brady Singer and Guthrie, Rivera, Schwartz, Nelson Maldonado, Jonathan India, Deacon Lippitt, those are all really, really good players. Michael Byrne, great players. But it's those other guys. It's the Christian Hickses of the world. It's Mark Colasabari. Uh-huh. Michael Byrne, who comes out of nowhere. Those are the guys that really solidify your club. And that's what made this, you know, this year so special, because we had so many guys contribute.
It's always easy to point out the ones that stand out on the field, but usually on every championship team, there's a role player that jumps out in the big moment or big situations or even throughout the season and really is that glue guy for the program. It's awesome that you reference those guys. Go back into the season. Were there any specific moments that jumped off to you that, again, would probably define your culture? Now, certainly you would have to be in your dugout to notice it. I don't think the traditional fan or even opposing coach would go, that's what Florida's about. But are there moments that stick out to you from this past season, a special one, that you went, man, that's exactly what Gator baseball is all about?
Well, when we lost 2 out of 3 to Tennessee, I think that was a turning point. And I think when we made a decision to move Michael Byrne to the back end of the bullpen, I think that changed our whole pitching staff. I think that kind of solidified everything. Hmm. Michael started the season as our midweek starter, and it ended up, I think, with 19 saves. But I think that weekend kind of got us going. And like I said, we had 3 hamate injuries. We had guys go down with different stuff throughout the year. I think one at bat that kind of sticks out, I remember JJ hit a grand slam against South Carolina in that ball game to win the final game of that series. Mm-hmm. And I think we won that series. I think we won two out of 3 games there. But I think that at bat was a huge for us. And then obviously, I think looking back at the World Series pitching performances we had, I think obviously JJ's play. What Robertson at the plate was obviously very, very huge. But I think in the first game when Nick Corbath threw a perfect strike to second and slowed down their momentum a little bit, because obviously once they get rolling, it's really hard to stop them. But I think that play was probably as big a play as we've had all year long.
Now, here's an off-the-script question, but I'm just interested. God's spent so many years in the dugout. We're always interested when we talk with great coaches, Sully, is how are you challenging yourself? How are you continuing to learn and grow? And I love that you mentioned that earlier, but what are maybe your routines or the details inside how you continue to challenge yourself or continue to make sure that you're in line with where you want to keep growing and developing inside the game?
Well, it's interesting you asked that question, because we as a staff asked ourselves that question a couple of weeks ago.
There you go.
We got off the road recruiting, and the challenge this year is going to be, how do we integrate this really good recruiting class with guys that are returning that won a national championship? Because I want the returning players to enjoy, obviously, what they accomplished. Mm-hmm. But we do need to move on to the 2018 season.
That's right.
But the challenge is going to be for us, for the new players, to feel like they were as involved in the national championship as the returning players. Hmm. And certainly we don't want any divide in the locker room. And all the new players that are obviously in our program right now watched every pitch and were involved emotionally as much as any fan that we had. And I want those guys to feel like they were a part of last year's team as well. And I think that's going to be the challenge. And we talked about that in our first meeting. It was really neat to see. And I just applaud our older guys for taking our younger guys underneath their wing. And like I said, letting them feel like they were a part of last year's team, even though they weren't, obviously here yet.
That's right. You've obviously got an upper echelon player, person. Like you said, you do your homework in the recruiting trails and making sure you're getting the right fits. I'm interested for our coaches, if they're listening into this, Sully, are there things that you're doing within your staff or within your program that are helping develop leaderships or enhance those leadership qualities that are inside some of those players to help bring them to the forefront and lead your team?
Yeah, we the ROTC stuff in the fall and try to develop some team chemistry and some bonds there. But ultimately, at the end of the day, the true team character is developed through the hardships during the season. And like I said, we started SEC play at 3-6. We won 91-1 games. Mm-hmm. We had to endure some injuries, like I said, everybody does. But I think those tough times really helps your team build character. And obviously we were able to do that, and we had some great leaders in our locker room. And like I said, I don't want to keep repeating myself, but a lot of really good players left their egos at the door.
Sure.
And they came together as a group, and they believed in themselves. And like I said, we just played really well down the stretch.
That's awesome. Well, I know we've been very forthright with your time, and I know you guys are started classes, getting back into it. But if you could, I know you've offered so much great advice for coaches that are listening in. But are there any other nuggets you have left in your pockets? Empty those out for us. And every young coach or even older coach listening to this, Sully, what would you offer those guys?
Well, I've done a lot of reflection on this year. And obviously, you know, when you're in this profession, we're all working so hard to win that last game of the year. I will say this, when it's all said and done and you do win the last game of the year, there is a sense of a little bit of a letdown. And I know that kind of sounds weird, but it's like, now what? Mm-hmm. And I think we lose perspective on the process. We lose perspective maybe sometimes on, you know, on the relationships that we have as we go along the way. We don't appreciate the hardships. We don't appreciate the wins as much as we should. We're always moving on to the next game. And then when you finally win the last game of the year, you kind of sit back and you go, that was awesome, but now what? And I think you kind of lose perspective. And I've spent a lot of time thinking about that this summer. And certainly it was a great accomplishment to win the first national championship at Florida. But I would just encourage young coaches to enjoy the ride, enjoy your job. It's the best job in the world that you could possibly have. And like I said, just enjoy it. And don't put as much stock in winning the last game of the year and pay more attention to the process and enjoy it as best you can.
That's awesome. Any day at the ballpark's better than a day doing anything else. Sully, thanks for being on the call with us today. We appreciate you joining the podcast. Obviously, congrats on the national championship. We wish you the best of luck walking in the fall. Thanks for being part of the ABCA, and we look forward to seeing you in Indianapolis, my man.
You got it. Thanks so much, and I'll look forward to seeing you in January.
All right. What a fantastic opportunity to connect with Kevin O'Sullivan, head coach from the University of Florida. So cool to hear the inner workings of his program, how he goes about things, building that consistent coaching staff, having those emerging role players come out throughout the season, and the minor moves that made a family atmosphere that helped those guys win in Omaha. We're excited as we look ahead in Indianapolis in January. Sully gets to finally kick off our ABCA National Convention as our national championship coach, always does. And as they walk into fall practice, Sully, we wish you and the Gators the very best of luck, and we look forward to seeing you guys in January. And another huge thanks to our great friends over at AstroTurf, again, the leaders in the clubhouse for the turf industry. We appreciate their support of this podcast. So let's connect with Aaron Klotz from AstroTurf. Let's hear how things are going for those guys in the turf industry. And coaches, thanks for checking this interview out. We're connecting with Aaron Klotz, Director of Baseball Operations on the East Coast. For Aaron, thanks for joining our call today.
Hey, Sheets. How you doing, buddy?
Doing great, man. How are you doing? What's been up this summer? You guys have been really busy, been on the road a bunch, been getting some extra business going. What's been going on over at AstroTurf?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm recruiting or out there preaching the good word of AstroTurf. It's been very similar to the old coaching days. But, yeah, it's been busy. We've done if I had to count, I probably can't put an exact number, but it's 30-plus baseball-specific fields. AstroTurf has done with their Diamond Series, talking about some high-profile clients from, you know, Boston College to Campbell University, Eastern Michigan, St. John's, Oral Roberts, Tulane. They've all got on the AstroTurf train in 2017. And then we got a big one coming up. First one of 2018 is going to be at the University of Kentucky in the SEC, and what a stadium they're going to have down there for the Wildcats coming up in a couple of years.
That's it. And so we're so thankful that obviously we're involved in this space with you guys as our proud sponsor of the podcast, and to see a lot of our loyal member coaches jumping on the AstroTurf train and changing their facilities along with you guys and the extraordinary job that you do. And I think for the purpose of this call, Aaron, let's talk about some of the research and development that's going on behind the scenes that most coaches aren't privy to, and give them a little more insight into what's going on at AstroTurf.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I think sets AstroTurf apart is obviously the Diamond Series and the technology and design behind the fiber, but behind the design is what I like to call the nutty professor, and that's Chris Brown, and he's the head of our research and development down in Dalton, Georgia. And Chris, I just met in Kansas City with, along with five other AstroTurf team members, and that was specifically to talk about how are we testing our baseball system to help replicate that natural clay, that natural grass,
sure,
look, speed, pace that these coaches want. And we don't just say it, we do test it. And in a matter of fact, at Kentucky, we're actually going to be testing the old Cliff in their last year So when they get on their brand new AstroTurf field, that they can almost have the exact field they have at the Cliff right now, as far as like ball hop, ball roll, bounce, and speed of play. So we put a little bit of time and effort, or, you know, put a little tee. We're not just hitting BP here, man. We're hitting off the tee. We're doing some soft toss. We're watching some video, and we're doing it in a turf world. But we're putting some time in and effort to make sure that we're constantly improving our systems to give exactly what the coaches want. And that's the big thing is people don't want to go away sometimes from natural grass, but if they do, they want to have that same feel. And
yep.
And we feel 100% confident that we are providing that when people do choose an AstroTurf surface.
That's outstanding. You know, as an old Wildcat, you know, that brings a smile to my face, and it's always good to see the bluegrass going away, but we're bringing in the no mow, no grow, no H2O solution. That certainly helps groundskeeping and keeping that surface playable throughout any weather. Now, Aaron, if anybody's listening to this part of the show and they want to connect with you guys, they're interested in doing some things around the facility, how would they go about doing that?
Yeah, and as a loyal ABCA member, feel free to give me a call at 517-902-4453, text, call, and if you prefer to email me, my email is aklotz, K-L-O-T-Z, at astroturf.com, and fellas, don't hesitate to reach out. You know, the one thing that's beautiful about us is that I am here to help you. I'm not here to back you into a corner. I'm here to talk baseball. I'm here to talk turf. If you want to do both, give me a call. I'd love to help.
The beauty of the guys at AstroTurf, yourself and Doug White, coaches, when you call, you got baseball guys you're talking to that have lived it, breathed it, walked the dugouts along with you. Aaron, thanks for jumping on the call today. We appreciate you giving some insight into what's going on at AstroTurf. We appreciate your sponsorship of the podcast, and be safe out there on the roads, my man.
Absolutely. Appreciate everything you guys do, and especially you, Sheets. We thank you 100%.
It's always a pleasure to connect with one of our proud sponsors, and even better when their representative is a loyal and proud ABCA member coach. Huge thanks to Aaron and the great folks over at AstroTurf. We appreciate their support. And if you want more information, head over to their website, astroturf.com. That's astroturf.com. Find out why they've been ahead of the curve for almost 50 years. Now, we are just picking up momentum as we stare down these fall months. We have some off-the-charts guests and content coming your way, and we do not want any of you to miss out on any of the shows that we have coming up for you this fall. So here's the rundown. Number one, iTunes or Google Play, you have to hit the subscribe button. Click that, it'll show up on your phone. Every Tuesday we put a brand new show out. You could also stay plugged into our website, abca.org. Education tab at the top, call us on the Clubhouse podcast link, will be right there waiting for you. You could scroll through and pick out the shows you want to listen to. And easily, number three, give us a follow on Twitter at ABCA1945. You'll always see the announcement of the release of the show. Plus, we'll pull some of the better quotes that come from that show. We'll release those throughout the week and give you some more gold that you could hold on to. Now, speaking of Twitter, our hashtag ABCA chat is blowing up. Coaches from around the country are checking in to share their insight, their thoughts, philosophies, while also connecting with other coaches, taking in their information. And it's networking and connecting all at the same time. It's the perfect platform for personal growth that we've created on Twitter, and we want to see you check in our next chat. So we know our coaches. We know what your Monday nights look like now that we're into the fall season, and that means Monday Night Football is on your radar, and it's on your TV screen for sure. So we're going to move hashtag ABCA chat to Tuesdays for the remainder of this year, with our next chat coming up on Tuesday, September 5th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Come join us and take part of this tremendous learning opportunity in our next hashtag ABCA chat, Tuesday, September 5th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll see you then. As always, make sure you're following us on Twitter at ABCA1945. You could also find me on there as well at CoachSheets3 and reach me directly by email Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at ABCA.org. We love getting your calls, the tweets, the messages on how these shows are reaching you on the other end of the call. And if you guys have any questions or feedback at all, never hesitate. Don't think twice. Reach out to us. Let's connect. Let's find out what you're thinking for the show, our guests, and how this content is impacting your programs. Also, while we got you, we want to make sure you know about our Barnstormers coaching clinics. We're hitting 20 cities around the Midwest and the Carolinas, a huge drive towards our Indianapolis convention. One-day coaching clinics, the very best teaching professionals in that area. Guys, these are for youth, high school, travel ball coaches, college coaches, anybody and everybody that's excited about baseball, that wants to learn. We'd love to see you come to the ballpark. If you want more information, head over to our website, abca.org/clinics, and we hope to see you jump on the Barnstormers Tour Bus this fall. And lastly, as always, guys, just a reminder, this is the podcast for the American Baseball Coaches Association. Brand new membership year kicking off Friday, September 1st, and we want to see you jump into the world's largest baseball coaches fraternity. Our registration opens up on Friday for our ABCA National Convention in Indianapolis. We're staring down January 4th through the 7th. 4 days of baseball heaven, 25 coaching clinics on the main stage, another 20 inside our Expo Theater, the world's largest gathering of baseball coaches, the world's largest baseball trade show, over 300 exhibitors, networking, connections everywhere. And we're going to be right there in Indianapolis. We're planning for over 6,000 of you guys to come join us, but you've got to come through the membership. Head over to abca.org, sign up to become an ABCA member, start your continuous membership, and then come join us in Indianapolis. If you have questions about any of that, reach out to us. And as always, we cannot thank you enough for listening into our show, staying dialed into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. And until next week, guys, keep growing, keep developing, keep challenging your why and what you're doing inside this game. We wish you and your club the very best, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.